Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. So the world has always been complex and confusing, and that's especially true in the modern world, in the scientific world. Very complicated, and people continue to ask, as they always have throughout the time since humans came into being. People are still asking, what is the meaning of life? Who am I? What should I be doing with my life? These very deep questions. And part of the problem today is that the old answers don't satisfy people anymore. You know, for so many centuries, religious beliefs provided answers for people. But they are losing their relevancy as we become more thoughtful and more pragmatic and more worldly. So we need a story about life that explains what life is all about and explains what our role should be. In other words, right now, we want a story that touches us personally. The old story is gone, and we don't have a new one yet. It's part of the anxiety these days. So a growing number of people are becoming interested in Buddhism and interested in Zen practice because they perceive it as a way to gain freedom from anxiety and from confusion. People are very interested in finding peace of mind in a world of anxiety. They're interested in finding wisdom in a world of confusion. Wisdom that goes way beyond what was provided by scriptures and old legends. So, in the modern world, we need a new story about life and about living. So people come to practice. So when people first come to practice, when they start, very few understand the heart of Zen practice. They come with ideas about practice, or you know, with kind of an intellectual picture of what Zen is. And this is very natural. It's to be expected. Because using the intellect is our training. Using the intellect is how we operate, especially in the modern world. Using the intellect is how we have learned to do things and how to solve problems and how to find answers and to develop various techniques to take care of our life. But Zen is not about solving problems with some technique, and especially not about solving problems with the intellect. we need to understand our world and its complexity and its confusion another way, a different way. So Zen practice is the way we can look at life and its confusion and its problems with the eyes of practice and not the eyes of the intellect. Zen is how we look at life with the eyes of a poet. So that we can understand the origin of things and understand the origin of our problems and our sufferings. Through our practice, through this non-intellectual practice, we will come to see that our confusion and our emotional difficulties are not really true problems. We come to understand that those things are created by a self-oriented mind or the ego. When we continue our practice, watching our mind and seeing how it works, we come to understand that the ego or our personality is make-believe. It's a make-believe self. It's made up. It is who we think we are or who we are told we are or who we want to believe we are. So we will support and we will defend this make-believe belief when we don't know who we really are. And when that happens, our mind becomes quite defensive, protecting itself, protecting the ego. And so when that happens, we cannot know the origin of things. That is because our emotional problems are created by a make-believe self. And we learn this through our own personal practice. Directly, immediately, through our own efforts. In this practice, we rely on our own efforts, on our own experiences, to come to an understanding of what our life is about. We don't depend too much on something that's written or something that's spoken. We have to rely on ourselves and our effort, our own effort, and not on the words of someone else. And our practice shows us the way to do this. I want to tell you a short story that an experience I had many years ago when I was still working. The fellow that I worked for was a smart, very effective engineer and businessman, a very nice guy. Everybody liked him. Everybody trusted him. He was good to be with. So one day, together, we went to a meeting together. We had to cross a parking lot and go to some other building to a meeting. And after the meeting, we were walking back together, chatting in a friendly way. And he said something like, you know, my father died when I was very young. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. So I stopped walking. I couldn't believe he said that. And he says, oh, wait, no, I didn't mean that as it sounded. So he went on to explain a little bit more. He said he had been very fond of his father when he was a young boy. And so his father's death was very painful. And he said, for a very long time, I was very unhappy. I had no enthusiasm for life. And only when I finally stopped feeling sorry for myself about losing my dad was I able to get involved. Saying that his father's death was the best thing that ever happened was his recognition that the difficulty he faced and resolved as a boy enabled him to appreciate himself and appreciate his life. So he was really saying he finally faced his unhappiness and his loss, and that effort gave him appreciation of who he was and what he was doing. So when we don't blame our difficulties or suffering on something in the past, and when we don't blame it on someone else, we don't blame it on what someone else did or not do or say. When we don't do that, that is a mark of selflessness. Like my friend, my boss said, I finally stopped feeling sorry for myself. When we no longer do that, we can find selflessness. So if we come to this practice asking or seeking an answer to the question, how do I solve my problem? Or how do I understand life and how to live? The answer lies with selflessness. So if we ask that question about the practice, the answer we get in return is something like, you have to act according to your true nature. Or you have to return to your true self. You have to return to selflessness. So we practice to let go of our made-up ideas about who we are. That letting go enables us to always know what to do, independent of whatever feelings we had, whether we are happy or unhappy. When we can let go of those feelings and ideas, we will always know what to do, and we will always feel our place in the world, selflessness. And usually when we feel happy, we say or do things accordingly. We are positive and we are friendly, we're creative, we're outgoing, and it makes others around us feel happy. They're glad to see us. But when we feel unhappy, we say and do things differently. We're negative, we're not creative, we turn inward and we feel sorry for ourselves. And people don't like to be around us. So happiness and unhappiness come and go. Emotions come and go all the time. Fundamentally, we don't change. Our true nature remains our true nature. When we continuously appreciate our true nature, we will no longer be pulled around by feelings. So in our practice, when we can really practice Zazen, silent sitting, when we truly practice Zazen, the feelings that arise don't stay. When they do arise, we let them go. We don't cling to them. We don't hold on. We simply say to ourselves, oh, this is just some feeling. That's all. And then we return to our calmness. We return to the mind that exists before feelings arise. Our true self is very, very quiet. So whatever feeling comes up in your practice or in your life, you don't have to worry. You don't have to care too much. Just resume your calmness that you learn through your practice. When we know how to resume our calmness, then we are quite happy to have feelings. Any kind of feelings, pleasant feelings or unpleasant feelings, we're very happy to have them because they encourage us to return to calmness. And when we see calmness this way, it is wisdom. When the arising emotion reminds us to return to calmness, this is wisdom. And we realize this is the original way of life. Here is the way to discover the true self. So we appreciate feelings that arise in Zazen, and we practice in the midst of confusion or delusion. This is the best way to appreciate calmness and understand the original way of life. When we find calmness in this way, as a joyful, patient response to feelings, when we find calmness that way, it encourages us in our daily life. No matter how we feel. The thing that we come to understand in our practice is that calmness, inherent calmness, is always with us. when we return to that inherent calmness, we will always know what to do or what to say. And there's no problem. When we understand, when we can return to calmness, we won't be upset or distracted by thoughts or feelings. And not being distracted means we can maintain our awareness and maintain our engagement with the world. So we can see things as they are, in a big sense. We can have a universal seeing, not just a narrow seeing with the eyes, but a universal seeing. And this is wisdom. So wisdom that we speak about in our practice, wisdom is not some particular kind of knowledge about one thing or the other. Wisdom is open to everything. So that we can create life, whatever our situation. Even in the midst of disappointment, in the midst of pain, in the midst of grief, we are always creating. Because our mind is always open when we understand our inherent calmness. But if we are self-oriented, we will only create problems. We will create problems if we blame our problems on others and if we don't know who we are. Here we are in a modern world where we know so much about science. We know so much about how the brain works. We know about our emotions. We know about our relationships. We know so much, but still, we are bewildered. We still walk around saying, oh, there's so much I don't know. But we know so much. We are bewildered because we don't know ourself or what our life is all about. So we need to give up thinking about all that too much. Just return to our practice. We need to simply return to the inherent stillness of our mind. This is the heart of practice. Does anybody have a question tonight? Yes, Umar.
Recently I was listening to the story of that little girl, Malala Yousafzai, who stood up to the Taliban. And she at the age of 12 said that, I want to go and get an education. And Taliban said, no, you cannot go and get an education. And they found her and they shot her in the face on a public bus. And she took responsibility for what had happened to her, and she moved forward. And now she is an author, and she's a spokesperson for educating girls. And I was thinking what you said was really, it relates to this, because it's just like, this 12-year-old girl from a third world country took on such a big responsibility. It was amazing. I was thinking, she actually, what you were saying was she went beyond herself. And she was able to take a tragedy in her life and turn it into something positive. Just like what you were saying with this manager, your boss you had, that his dad passed away and he sort of took responsibility for his own life and sort of became his own dad and grew up in that moment. Those things that happen to us are really interesting, and because small incidents can happen every day and we don't notice them, but they are there to open us up. And I think just by sitting zazen over the past few years, I've come to realize this, that this is what happens, that the mind becomes finely tuned to these moments as to how to take something and turn it into something positive.
Okay. Thank you.
So knowing wisdom alone is enough, or if we take the science and technology, it is helping to relieve some type of sufferings. Even the mic I'm using is used in a sense to ask question in a way to everybody knows about it. And so the technology is used in a context to relieve certain type of problems and sufferings. So in that way, it is also a wisdom, isn't it? I mean, science is giving certain type of wisdom. It is innate wisdom to relieve some sufferings. And that way, is it science is considered as a part of Zen? And because it is, unless we have an open view, we can't get the full view. So, is science is not required, or how we can take it? I mean, wisdom is like open to everything, like emptiness or stillness you have mentioned. So from the stillness comes the form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Mm-hmm. So the form is representing the science, and the emptiness is the wisdom, which is the science comes from. So it has a inheritance from that. So my question is whether can we take science also inclusion of wisdom?
When we have an opportunity to use some technology, we really need to bring out our wisdom, to know how to utilize the technology, how to use the technology, the best way to use the technology, without having it use us. You know, there's medical technology. They have robotic surgery now that can do the most marvelous things and really help people's difficulties and save lives and provide cures. And if we should come to need that, some kind of surgery or some kind of medicine, and it helps us, we're very grateful, and we can leave that technology in the operating room. We can leave that technology in the doctor's office. So that technology is no problem. It's personal technology where we run into problems. You know, personal technology, you know what I mean by personal technology? Those little devices or even bigger ones that provide us with entertainment and excitement. We can be seduced by them because we really crave the excitement. So we can be seduced by technology, and without being conscious of it, it can overwhelm us, overwhelm our lives. We need some kind of wisdom to help us recognize that we need to place a limit on how we relate to personal technology. If we don't know what the limit is, we become a slave to it. So today we have such things as apps for parents to be able to monitor how much time their children spend on a device. Because the parents know that too much is not a good thing. But that device, to a child, it's very, very seductive. The child doesn't have the capacity and the wisdom to know when to stop. But at some point in our life, we need to develop that capacity, that kind of wisdom. I use it. It was useful. I don't need it anymore. Put it down. Leave it alone. Come back to relating with people. So in the world we have today, which is so technically oriented, we need wisdom more than ever because these devices can seduce us, overwhelm us. So I'll say to everybody, when you come here, when you come for Zazen, when you come to be quiet, to express that other side of yourself, leave your device in your car. Don't bring it here. It's not so much that it will create a disturbance for other people if the phone happens to go off. People will adjust to that. It's no problem. But if you come here, put these things behind. Leave them at home. Leave this data gathering, data collection, intellect, encouragement. Leave that part of your life in your car and come here with a quiet, open mind. Not worry about that stuff. For your own good. Not that it's a disturbance, so we need to make a rule. But for your own good, leave it behind. Let's not let the technology overwhelm us. Let's return to ourself. Thank you.
My question is this. It seems like Zen doesn't tell us much about what we should do when we are not meditating, because when we are not meditating, we are working. We are attending to family matters. We are, have jobs. At least most people, other people have jobs. We're pursuing our daily lives, pursuing some sort of goals, money for maybe for a sick parent. You know, you want to buy your parent a car because they don't have a car or something. You want to pay rent. These are not selfish behaviors. These are selfless behaviors. Our commitment to other people, our commitment to our friends, our commitment to our families, we provide for them. We do what we do when we provide them. Or maybe, you know, bring some sort of vaccine to African children. We don't do it because of selfish reasons. We do it because we care for the world, and we do those things when we are not meditating. So, okay, just what do you think? What do you think?
Good. You should do that. Be selfless. Be unselfish and do these things.
So tell me, what do you mean of a person who is selfish? Like, what is someone who is opposite of that? Who is, do you understand?
They will do things in their life, including those beneficial things. They will do them with some idea of gaining something personal for themselves. This which means they won't be totally giving when they are trying to give.
I do think about that question. Let's say a person who's trying to do stuff to gain power, but with the intent that once he obtains power, would benefit the world.
Oh,
you know, what do you say about that? Someone who does these kind of stuff. Mm. No. It seems that
that's a misunderstanding, because we shouldn't wait to give of ourselves. We should do it in this moment. If we say, I don't need to be unselfish now, I'll do it only when I have the money or the power, which is later. But what about now?
Activism doesn't work. Like, there are studies that show that activism doesn't work. Like, what? Activism.
Activism?
Yeah, you know, like them protesting, like a government policy. It never really works. It doesn't change society. It seems that what changes society are people, you know, with power, with money, with influence. It seems like if you strive for these other things, you're more able to benefit the world rather than protesting. Because you can't benefit the world without power, without money, you know? Like, never mind.
Yes, you can. You can benefit the world every moment you're alive, whatever you do. It's just, it may not appear in the New York Times, but you know in your heart, this is the right thing to do. So collectively, we can benefit the world. Individually, we can benefit the world. But I know what you mean, because some people say, people who gain influence and wealth say, oh, now I can create a philanthropy and I can benefit the world. But what about the 30 years that came before? So we don't have to wait to be influential or wealthy or powerful. We can help each other moment by moment, and there's the source of our joy. I'm not waiting. I'm not going to wait.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.